good evening, and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 16th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Forecasters predict a major windstorm will hit central and eastern Washington and the Idaho Panhandle in north central Idaho tonight. Moscow Council approves eCity Park stage design and construction supervisory contract. Moscow Council approves timing limits for downtown vehicular street closures for special events. No closures weekdays during the daytime. And Idaho Democrats warn of financial ruin if Affordable Care Act health care subsidies expire. We will have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Forecasters are predicting a major windstorm to hit central and eastern Washington and northern Idaho tonight. The National Weather Service high wind warning starts at 10 p.m. and will be in effect until 4 p.m. tomorrow. National Weather Service meteorologist Daniel Butler in Spokane says forecasters have high confidence winds will reach 50 to 60 miles per hour in Spokane. Forecasts for the Palouse say maximum wind gusts overnight and tomorrow will also be 60 miles per hour. Butler said there's a small chance that a thunderstorm in the coming cold front could push wind speeds to 70 miles per hour or more in the region. He said current models show winds peaking between 4 and 5 a.m. in the Spokane area. The Spokesman Review reports forecasts are on par with devastating wind storms that hit the region in the past, including one in 2015, and that wet conditions could cause the storm to replicate a monster storm in January 2021 that left 100,000 without power. Avista says there will be power outages in the region overnight, but it's difficult to predict where and how much. Avista issued a statement this afternoon which says, strong winds are forecast to begin early Tuesday night and continue through Wednesday morning across Avista's Washington and Idaho service area. Saturated soil from recent rain combined with strong winds increases the likelihood of outages caused by falling trees and limbs, which can bring down power lines. Avista is prepared to respond and urges customers to prepare for potential storm damage and outages. Avista continues to monitor the National Weather Service forecasts closely. Crews are ready with fueled and stocked fleet vehicles. Warehouse supplies are in place in Spokane and outer offices, and assessment teams are standing by. Wire guard teams are prepared to help ensure public safety near downed power lines. Tree crews are mobilized, and employees are moving from their typical day-to-day responsibilities to assist in storm-related activities. With sustained winds expected, estimated restoration times are not likely to be available until the storm has passed and Avista can complete damage assessments. This process may take 24 hours or more, depending on the extent of the damage. Customers can view current outage numbers on the outage map at myavista.com/outage. Initially, the estimated restoration times will indicate that outages are under assessment. As assessments are completed and more information becomes available, estimated restoration times will be updated on the outage map. That was a statement from Avista Utilities issued this afternoon. Butler encourages people who live near large trees stay on the lower floors of their homes overnight, and those who drive high-profile vehicles stay off the roads overnight. Democrats rallied at Republican U.S. Senator Jim Risch's office in downtown Boise this afternoon, saying families will be financially devastated if Congress allows the Affordable Care Act subsidies to expire. The enhanced subsidies came in response to the COVID pandemic, but when Congress extended them with the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, they also set an expiration date of December 31st, 2025. Ada County Democrats Chair Jared DeLoof said, "People are already paying more for groceries, rent, childcare, and utilities. Families are cutting back everywhere they can, but there is one place where they should not be forced to cut back, and that is their health care. And yet, that's exactly what's about to happen here in Idaho." Democratic House Minority Leader Elena Rubel of Boise said, "We know that tens of thousands of Idahoans are going to lose their coverage on the exchange because of this, and many others will become uninsured because many people are going to drop out of coverage." Rubel said, "Some people will face financial ruin if they downgrade to plans with lower premiums and higher deductibles." Retired Dr. Laura Tyrrell told the crowd her 35-year-old daughter, who is a farmer, expects her Affordable Care Act premium to increase from $200 per month to $1,000 per month unless Congress extends the enhanced subsidies. Former emergency room nurse Sydney Buffington told the Idaho Press at the rally, "I was an ER nurse for many years, and I remember my first patient who died because she didn't have health care. She avoided going to the doctor because she didn't have health insurance. This is before Obamacare, and she died of pneumonia because she waited." The Nampa Centennial Job Corps Center is once again accepting applications after a sudden pause in funding caused by DOGE sent students home at the end of June. The pause came as Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency tried to shut down 123 federally funded Job Corps centers around the nation. Those centers served more than 20,000 students. A federal judge stopped the Federal Labor Department from shutting down the program, saying the actions of the Labor Department under DOGE violated the shutdown protocol that Congress had mandated. The nonprofit National Job Corps Association sued to stop the shutdowns. The association consists of business, labor, volunteer, and academic organizations. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP programming is sponsored by listeners like you and by Essential Art Gallery and Fine Gifts at 203 South Main Street in Moscow. Showcasing high-quality art, pottery, jewelry, art glass, sculptures, scarves, textiles, wood and metal art, and fine chocolate and gifts from regional, national, and international artists. KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
The Moscow City Council last night approved a professional services agreement with Design West Architects for design and construction management services for the rest of the East City Park stage project. The agreement would be between the 30% design phase, which is already completed, to the completion of the project and would cost the city $72,700. City Parks and Facilities Manager David Schott explained where the design and construction management services would fit in within the total project and noted that the actual construction request for proposals would go out in 2026.
The stage was always anticipated to be a second phase to the restroom construction, which was completed in 2013. Unfortunately, the existing stage deteriorated more than anticipated. In the routine maintenance of spring of 2024, it was determined that the roof needed to come off for public safety. So Because of that, design and replacement of the stage became prioritized in both the current budget and the capital improvement plan. A little bit more background. On May 6, 2024, Council approved a contract with Design West Architects to develop a 30% conceptual design and cost estimate for the project. This design was built upon the previous design and outreach effort that concluded in 2012 based on the extensive public outreach effort that dated all the way back to 2010 originally. The professional services agreement itself provides professional architecture and related design and construction administration services necessary to complete the project. Includes a final design of approximately 1,200 square foot covered stage at East City Park. The covered stage would be attached to the existing restaurant building and will include storage and electrical mechanical rooms. The project includes site planning, removing of the existing stage, earthwork is required, underground utilities, relocation and removal of pathways, and repair of landscaping as necessary. Schedule of service delivery, we are looking at 60% design if approved in March of 26, with 90% in April of 26. Final bid documents would be available mid-May of 26. We're anticipating construction beginning first part of September after our event season. As far as their design, we've got the breakdown here at the bottom, but the total basic compensation would be $72,700 to get us from 30% through completion. This professional services agreement brings us from 30% all the way through completion. So that's construction management services all the way to final completion. The bid package would come back to council, though, to accept the bid when it does go out to bid.
Thank you.
That was Moscow Parks and Facilities Manager David Schott. The vote in favor of the Design and Construction Management Agreement with Design West was 5-0. Councilmember Drew Davis had recused himself at the beginning of the agenda item for potential conflict of interest. The City Council also voted unanimously last night to approve new policy regarding the time groups are allowed to close downtown streets to vehicular traffic for special activities like street fairs, carnivals, and parades. Here's Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap speaking about the proposal at last night's meeting.
The chamber requested the city to amend city code to prohibit street closures for event activities generally during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, and excluding, well, I don't think they initially mentioned holidays, I have to recall in the letter, but specifically looking at that time period from 9 to 5 during Monday through Friday of wanting to try to curtail street closures for events unless it's something associated with construction activity or something else that has to occur. We staffed this up with council leadership and the mayor. And reviewed it, felt that code amendment was probably not the best path at this time, that if the council wished to establish this as a policy, that we felt the resolution would be appropriate. It's a little bit more flexible, gives us time to evaluate the impact of the policy and then to change it in the future if the council feels that it's appropriate to do so. So staff has prepared a resolution for your consideration today. This resolution is fairly straightforward. It sets up a fairly basic policy that the city would establish a policy to prohibit the closure of public streets within downtown Moscow, generally defined as being Lewis Street on the south, Washington Street on the east, A Street to the north, and Jackson Street on the west for the purposes of holding public or private events other than those conducted by the city or on behalf of the city from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. local time, Monday through Friday, excluding any federal holidays. And I know there's been some concerns and questions about the 4th of July or holiday events when many of the establishments downtown may be closed, so those are excluded from the policy. It also does not apply to any street closures associated with any city-related emergency services, maintenance, repair, reconstruction of roadways, or utilities located within the public right-of-way.
City Councilmember Julia Parker commented, and Councilmember Sandra Kelly had a question about the shutdown prohibition schedule.
We are seeing more and more events, and like I pointed out before, that it's kind of odd that anybody can pay for and have an event downtown and just close downtown. So I think that this moves us in the right direction, but I think, you know, there's probably more room for continuing to tighten up the policies about who can or how people can have community events downtown.
Seems like we could get an influx of everyone want to do something on a Saturday. Why didn't we add Saturday to this also, or the whole weekend?
But you couldn't, because that's where the vast majority of events occur, is on Saturdays, or it's more often than not, Saturdays are going to be when those events are typically held. There are a number of establishments, whether they're banks, insurance, or real estate offices, that typically are closed during the weekend days. So that was not, I guess, that was not the request of the Downtown Business Alliance and the Chamber, and that didn't appear to be the point of contention or conflict.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Bill Belknap, preceded by City Councilmember Sandra Kelly and Councilmember Julia Parker. The vote for the new restrictions on downtown street closures was 6-0 in favor.
With the holiday season now in full swing, experts are warning people in Wyoming and across the U.S. about the increased risks that come with using digital payment apps, shipping presents, purchasing gift cards, and charitable giving. Many scammers are separating people from their hard-earned money through text messages. Kathy Stokes with AARP's Fraud Watch Network says one common text scam claims that a package can't be delivered until you click and pay a small fee. She says the true cost can be much higher.
The problem with that is you're going to a fake website. They could be putting malicious software onto your device. At the very least, they're going to steal your credit card information.
Nearly 9 in 10 adults across the U.S. report being targeted by scammers, according to a new AARP survey. The most common scams in Wyoming last year were impersonation fakes, where criminals claim that they're with a trusted government agency or company. According to the Cyber Wyoming Alliance, the most impersonated firms last year were PayPal, Amazon, the United States Postal Service, and Geek Squad. More tips for outsmarting scammers are available online at aarp.org/fraudwatch. Criminals are also getting better at using payment apps like Venmo and Zelle to drain Wyomingites' bank accounts. Stokes encourages people to only use these apps with people and companies you know and trust.
Using them with a retailer, for example, that you've never done business with could be a little dicey, because if there is a problem, you don't have the same protections as you would if you just used a credit card.
7 in 10 consumers are expected to give gift cards this year, but cards conveniently on display at retail outlets can be compromised by scammers who record the card's number and security code, or PIN. When you buy the card, those funds can be siphoned into scammer accounts. End-of-year charitable giving is another opportunity for criminals who create fake websites for end child hunger and other causes. Stokes says it only takes a few minutes research to outsmart scammers.
And if you're giving to charity this time of year, that's a wonderful thing, but make sure the charity is legitimate. You can go to places like charitynavigator.org or give.org to make sure that the money that you want to go to the charity you care about is actually going there.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
The Pullman City Council will vote tonight on the confirmation of Frank Mulcahy as the city's new public works director. Mayor Francis Benjamin's appointment of Mulcahy is subject to council confirmation, and if confirmed, Mulcahy will start work January 12th. Also on the Pullman City Council's agenda tonight, there is an engineering services agreement with JUB Engineers to design the city wastewater treatment plant dewatering improvements project. The council will also vote on accepting a Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program grant for development of Pullman Veterans Memorial Park. The council will also vote on accepting a restricted monetary contribution from the American Legion Maynard Price Post 52 for developing that same Veterans Park. The council will also vote on adopting fee schedules for street excavation, for fire permits, and for community development applications. Well, that's it for the KRFP. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, the National Weather Service has a high wind warning that will be in effect from 10 p.m. tonight until 4 p.m. tomorrow. The high wind warning is for most of central and eastern Washington and northern and north central Idaho. Southwest winds 25 to 45 with gusts up to 60 miles per hour expected. Isolated gusts up to 70 miles per hour. Damaging winds will blow down trees and power lines. Widespread power outages are expected. Travel will be difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. Remain in the lower levels of your home during the windstorm and avoid windows. Watch for falling debris and tree limbs. Use caution if you must drive. The National Weather Service also has a flood watch, which is in effect until 8 a.m. tomorrow. For Latah, Shoshone, Bonner, Benoit, and Kootenai counties, excessive runoff may result in flooding of rivers, creeks, streams, and other low-lying and flood-prone locations. Creeks and streams may rise out of their banks. Flooding may occur in poor drainage and urban areas. Area creeks and streams are running high and could flood with more heavy rain. There's an increased risk of rock and mudslides in areas of steep terrain and near burn scars, especially in areas with saturated soils from previous recent rainfall. You should monitor later forecasts and be alert for possible flood warnings. Those living in areas prone to flooding should be prepared to take action should flooding develop. The forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area is calling for 100% chance of precipitation tonight. Rain before 5 a.m., then rain possibly mixed with snow. Some thunder possible. Low 36, windy. Southwest winds 10 to 15, increasing to 25 to 30 miles per hour overnight. Winds could gust up to 50 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. 80% chance of precipitation tomorrow. Rain showers before 7 a.m., then a slight chance of snow after 10 a.m. Some thunder possible. Temperatures rising to 43 by noon, then falling to 35 during the remainder of the day. Very windy. West winds 35 to 40, decreasing to 25 to 30 in the afternoon. Gusts up to 60 miles per hour. Little or no snow accumulation expected. 60% chance of precipitation Wednesday night. Snow likely after 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy, low 32. West winds 5 to 15. Becoming south after midnight. Gusts up to 20. Little or no snow accumulation expected. And 100% chance of precipitation Thursday. Snow likely before 10 a.m. Then rain and snow and rain afternoon. Snow level rising to 4,400 feet in the afternoon, high 45. Southeast winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 20. Little or no snow accumulation expected Thursday. Currently 46 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is up next. Rude Awakenings on live in the studios at 7:30. Brent Bentz in to play music for you at 9:30. And at 11, we'll have Sons of Patriarchy. So stay tuned for all that. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Friends of the Clearwater, a 501c3 environmental nonprofit dedicated to protecting your public lands. FOC is defending the wildlands, wildlife, and waterways of North Central Idaho for future generations. Friendsoftheclearwater.org.
The debate about the second strike that killed the two men clinging to the wreckage after the September 2nd attack has focused on the law of war. But What if the United States is not at war? I'm Bill Newman for the Civil Liberties Minute. The Trump administration asserts that the country is at war because the president has determined that the country is engaged in an armed conflict with narco-terrorists who are attempting to smuggle drugs into the country. The administration hasn't yet made public the factual basis, the evidence for the assertion that the persons in the boats are drug smugglers headed towards this country. The administration also has kept under wraps the Department of Justice memorandum that supposedly sets forth the legal justification for the lethal strikes. That failure, this failure to disclose, matters. After all, the Constitution gives Congress, not the president, the power to declare war, and Congress has not authorized this armed conflict. As the New York Times analysis points out, parsing the details of the second strike, viewing these killings through the lens of the law of war, leaves aside the crucial question whether the first strike and all the other attacks on all the other boats and killing all those people is legally and factually justified at all. And if not, what do we call those killings? The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the ACLU, because freedom can't protect itself.